it used to keep me sane because I'd be able to at least understand and know that there are people out there with similar thoughts, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah, man. And now it's just like, what the hell?
Yeah. I've been taking a break from listening to podcasts. I've been listening to music a lot more. And helps my blood pressure for sure.
Oh man, I'll tell you what. I mean, you forget how good it feels to like roll the windows down and just listen to music instead of listening to somebody, you know, go on and bitch about the system.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially at the COVID stuff. And now a lot of people are thinking I'm a lot less crazy than I was at the beginning.
Yeah.
When this whole thing started, I'm like, watch the periphery, watch what they're really doing, because they're going to be, you know, it's going to be a bunch of, you know, fuck games.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's not as bad as they're saying it is. And they're like, well, the video's from China. I'm like, what you were meant to see.
Right.
And I was just saying all this stuff. And like, some people would ask me like, well, how do you know? I'm like, cause that's what I would do.
Right. I mean, seriously.
Yeah. And now they're coming out while the cities are burning. Now they're coming out and saying, you know, admitting that they were wrong or they overshot it or it wasn't as bad. I think there's a couple stories coming out of Italy where they don't have any cases anymore. I don't know if that's 100% true. I don't know. It's hard to tell these days, but
right.
I think there was a doctor over there that was saying it was bacterial, but it wasn't a virus.
Wow.
So who knows?
Well, I'll tell you what, man, with all that shit and with like, you know, flu still killing more people and the drop, you know, like what I want to see is the numbers of reported deaths from pneumonia and reported deaths from COVID in 2018, 2019 and 2020. Right.
Like, yeah.
If there's a significant fall off, you know, for this year,
right,
you know, it's a pneumonia basically, and
right,
pneumonia kills the same amount of people every year.
Yeah, which pneumonia can jack your ass up too, man.
I've had it,
dude. I had a real bad case in high school, and I was in the hospital for like 2 weeks.
Damn.
Yeah, and that was a healthy 18-year-old,
right?
That played soccer and did Muay Thai. You know.
Yeah, I mean, it almost killed me as a kid, man.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I had I think it was 104 temperature one night.
Yes.
Yeah. Walking pneumonia, and holy hell, like they took me in and, you know, they're like, well, he's through the worst of it now, but luckily, you know, he's young and he could fight it, or else, you know, this could have been really bad.
Yeah. That was me. I think I was in that 104 to 106 range. I was hallucinating, and that's when they took me to the ER.
Wow.
Yeah, shot me up with erythromycin and had my veins kept collapsing. And
oh
yeah, I couldn't I was like dry heaving and I couldn't stop. And so I'm allergic to a whole, you know, codeine and everything like that. So they just put put some morphine in my drip, and I was sitting there going, okay. And yeah, it was a rough time, man. But yeah, I was an 18-year-old. So yeah, somebody at, you know, 60 and above.
Oh man, yeah, I killed the shit out of you.
Exactly, man. Damn near killed me. And then I don't know, maybe the high temperature, maybe that has something to do with me being slightly retarded.
Same here. Or maybe I'm just retarded. Who knows?
Oh man. That's cool. So yeah, I caught some of your live stream you did the other night.
My son Jackson, who's in jiu-jitsu, which has now started up again, thank God.
Good.
Yeah, man, they finally, you know, it was this past week was the first week back, and you know, he's really like, he's been doing this since he was 3 and he's about to turn 9.
Oh wow.
And the coach was like, "Hey man, why don't you come up and roll with the teenagers?" Because I mean, he's a big kid to begin with, and he's just really good.
Right.
And so to kind of push him, it's not that he's going to just whip every 10-year-old, because that's where the teenage years start for jiu-jitsu. It's not that he's going to go in there and just whip every 10-year-old, but that, you know, going up and rolling with dudes that are bigger and stronger.
This is going to make him better.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got 6 years of mat time and he's big, you know, a bigger kid. So it just makes sense.
Yep.
But yeah, that's it's going to be a crucible at first, but yeah, he's going to progress.
Well, that's the thing,
exponentially.
that's all he was used to in the beginning, right? So, you know, when you start when you're three, everybody's at least 4, 5, 6 mm-hmm. years old. And so to go back and do that, like it's almost like he likes it better anyway. You know, there's that weird mm-hmm. part of us that kind of mm-hmm. just laughs when we get our asses handed to us. And yeah, you learn, you take your lumps and you keep on trucking.
Right, man. And that's just, that's setting him up good for just life. Because so many people today just view adversity as oppression. And people are like us, it's like, it's just life.
That's right.
Oh, can you believe this happened? I'm like, eh, not the first time I've seen it. Time to make the donuts.
This is exactly right, man. I mean, well, that or maybe I'm wasting my time. You know, like if I don't have set aside recreational time, you know, it's one of those things where if I'm not endeavoring to make my life better or create or produce or do whatever it is, like, you know, the amount of time I wasted as a young man, mm-hmm. you know, watching sports, playing video games, whatever, you know, I wish I would have had that mentor out there that would have said, hey, you need to find something that you can create on the cheap and produce on the cheap or do whatever on the cheap and continue to do that instead of wasting your most valuable resource, which is your time. And at that age, I mean, your energy, you can just, mm-hmm. I mean, instead of, you know, partying your ass off right until 2 o'clock in the morning, sleeping until 12, hey, you know, get a good night's rest, get up and get back at it, you know? And that's, I'll tell you what, to be 40 years old and to, you know, kind of discovered entrepreneurship later in life, you know, where you throw wet noodles at the wall and you just hoping some bullshit sticks. And yeah. most of the time it doesn't, but you're still, you know, that process is much faster and easier, you know, with first and foremost, a mentor. And, right. and also when you have the, you know, like no wife, no kids, you got nothing to lose, you know, you don't have a lot of resources at that point either, but you know, the risk that you can take and the faster you can try things and fail, the mm-hmm. better off you are.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, you call going to school. Like yeah. when you're trying to do something that kicks your ass and you fail and it's like, well, you learn that's, you know, you're going to school on that one. And the next time around, yeah, I'm in the same boat. You know, we have a lot of parallels, you know. We both just turned 40. We're both trying to do entrepreneurship and stuff like that. I'm not running for office though.
Oh, it's because you're way smarter than I am.
No, I just, I don't know. My wife actually wants me to. She's like, why don't you just run for sheriff? I'm like,
there you go, man. That's what I'm talking about.
I was like, you know what? That would be cool and all, but,
well, and the thing yeah, is like, dude, what if you just, I mean, seriously, you ran for sheriff. You just came out and said, hey, listen, my guys are staying at the precinct. This is my promise to you. You guys want to elect me sheriff? This is my promise to you. I'm gonna pull all my guys off the street. You know, mm-hmm. unless you basically kill, murder, I guess, murder, assault, rape, kidnap, cause some property damage, or try to coerce somebody. Listen, I'm gonna leave you guys alone. It's time to get back to business. We're gonna stay out of your business. We're gonna keep all the bureaucrats out of this county. Mm-hmm. By the way, all nonviolent crime, that stuff is bullshit to begin with, and mm-hmm. we're not gonna deal with that anymore. So you guys, you're adults, start adulting. You know, like that's the whole thing as a sheriff. Let adults be adults, and when they screw up and they get violent because they don't know how to, you know, communicate positively with each other, that's when they step in. But outside of that, man, do what you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a sheriff that had you know, they'll do like the text message thing, like, can we count on your support? And I'm like,
yeah.
And I just wrote, and it's from a county I used to live in. I don't even live in that county anymore. So
was it Gwinnett?
Yeah.
And, I got something from those guys not long ago either.
Yeah. And I said, well, what is your stance on the war on drugs and the NFA and which National Firearms Act,
right?
And which Status Quo did a really, really good two-part episode on that, the history of gun control. And mm-hmm. and the response was, well, I'm for law and order and thus the law, and so I have to enforce the law. And I said, incorrect answer. I said, because both of those programs have ruined almost, if not more, lives than our shitty foreign policy.
Oh, man. I'd argue, over the decades, It's you're talking millions on both sides. That's the problem, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say, you know, as far as not just directly, as far as people dying, people going to prison and things like that. Mm-hmm. Look at all the other programs, civil asset forfeiture, surveillance systems, taxes that are going up, regulations and everything like that. So you're probably talking, you know, the entire population is affected by both of those things. And then, you know, then there's also people that are getting rich both off of those two programs alone and our foreign policy. And I guess you could actually say that all that stuff is intertwined.
Oh man. Yeah. As soon as you start talking about the alphabet soup, I think you're exactly right, man. I mean, when you've got the CIA and the FBI that are, that everybody knows are just as corrupt as shit these days, right?
I mean, oh yeah. The CIA and the DEA are the biggest drug dealers in the country.
Well, and that's the thing is you got one on one side. Actually, I should say you've got them on both sides. And the thing is you got border patrol in between that facilitates, right? So between DEA, FBI, and the Border Patrol, and probably the Coast Guard on top of it. I'm not saying all the Coasties, but I'm telling you right now, there's probably a understanding, especially at higher echelons, between, you know, those four different, you know, let's just call them bureaucracies of the government, where, yeah, hey man, we know where the windows of opportunity are. We know, you know, where patrols are going to be at all times. We know where all this stuff can be. There can be plausible deniability, and there can be people running these things in and out of the country, you know, as they want to. And it's all by design. You know, that's the thing is you know, somebody may have said in the beginning that, you know, this was all for good intentions and all that kind of nonsense, but come on, we know.
It was a jobs program. After Prohibition.
That's right. That's what you do with all those kids and, you know, all those little boys in, you know, kindergarten when you start feeding them ADHD type medicine because school is so damn boring and they can't pay attention. They finally get out and they're like, screw it, man. I got to go pick up a gun and get out, you know, 15 years of frustration.
Yeah. Yeah. School to me was prison.
Oh, hell yeah.
And then, I got a friend, Pat Watson, who was doing drug interdiction stuff in the Coast Guard. And he was saying that he had told his higher ups, you know, with the money that we spend, he goes, it would actually be cheaper if we bought all of the cocaine and just burned it.
Shocker. Oh, well, you know, I mean, burn it, dump it in the water or whatever.
Right,
you know?
Right. But he's like, we should just buy it all and then destroy it. And that would be cheaper and safer than what we're doing right now. And he's like, they looked at me like I was growing a unicorn out of my forehead. But then you can't have good OERs and promotions. And
well, and that, and here's the other thing. It's like, you know, drugs are expensive, right? And I mean, I think cocaine is actually... And forgive me if I'm wrong on this, but I think a component of cocaine can actually, or is used in things like lidocaine, you know, where, you know, you're
Novocaine.
All that kind of stuff where you get a shot and, you know, you get numb, right? And yeah. I mean, you see people who, you know, screw with coke and all that kind of stuff and their faces, they're touching their face all the time because it's numb. Mm-hmm. It's the same damn thing as like, well, you know, you could just have this stuff available to the market because let's face it, you didn't stop it from getting into country. Hell, you didn't stop it from getting into schools or prisons, for God's sakes. Mm-hmm. There's obviously a demand for this kind of stuff.
It was legal. You could buy it at the drugstore.
Right.
Up until like in the early 1900s.
Yeah.
Just like you could go into the Walgreens, you could go get your cannabis oil or whatever over the counter.
Yep.
It was actually in the American.
It was in the medical.
The pharmacology book. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly right.
And I remember when they were trying to push the law through, and they had the guy who was the doctor that was the president of the AMA, and he was like, though, because especially with with cannabis, I don't like using marijuana. That's its slave name.
You say the same thing. I never call it the slave name, but I like it.
And but he was like, I always start there because, at best case scenario, it works. At the worst case, on the downside, it doesn't work, but it doesn't do any harm. The same thing with cocaine. You know, you could buy it over the counter, and they used to use it in all sorts of things, and there's all sorts of derivatives. And then you get companies like Bayer who invent certain things with it, and then holy crap, now cocaine's illegal, and the pharma, big pharma, you know.
Yeah, they control it. What is it? Article 1, Section 8, Clause 9 or Clause 8? I think it's Clause 8. Yeah, it's the whole, excuse me, man. The I don't know. You want to do some IP, like the whole IP conversation? A lot of people have trouble with IP, and
yeah, let's do it. I don't care.
I think one of the coolest things that I ever read was this book called The Invention of Air, right? Where back in the day, nobody understood. There wasn't a problem with the space in between things. So it was like, you know, hey, we don't understand it, and there's no problem with it, so we're not going to study it. And so this guy who was actually really close to Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, that these guys wrote multiple, I mean, like they wrote a bit, like Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin wrote about this guy. I wish I could pull his name from memory, but at any rate, this guy as a kid started doing tests and things on, you know, plants and animals in a vacuum, basically, and not so much a vacuum, but in space, right? So he would take glass, he would submerge it into a tank of water to where the only opening was on the bottom, so that the air inside couldn't, you know, recirculate and refresh itself. And so he witnessed, you know, at a very young age, you know, animals and plants would expire. And then he started, as he got older, to do this thing where he was, you know, looking at putting both of them in the same environment for longer. And he obviously observed that both of them were able to sustain life longer, not wilt, than if they were alone. And so he starts doing all of these experiments and figures out, you know, the composition of our atmosphere, and that, you know, that, you know, he couldn't, you know, patent it. He couldn't do, you know, like he couldn't own any of that kind of stuff. And one of the coolest things that comes from the story is that, hey, you know, all of this technology, all the advances in human society are because knowledge was diffused at some point. Knowledge was diffused. You stood on probably some really smart people's shoulders, you know, Jurassic Park, right? Mm-hmm. And at that point, you took everything that they did and you added to it, and it good or bad, one way or another, it's still advanced technology. And so the argument is, well, if you're delaying artificially, you know, the entry into the market for somebody who can create or produce or take old technology or old ideas or old information or old science and update it or add to it, then what you're doing is basically, you know, putting an artificial road or a barrier in the path of the human species in terms of developing. And it's you know, it's a guard against, you know, the average man and woman out there for entry into a market, because it protects old ways of manufacturing, it protects old energy, it protects old technology, it protects all the old guard, instead of allowing, you know, future, or I should say people who live now, that entry into the market. And I'll tell you what, I think IP is one of the worst things that the government ever came up with, especially in the Constitution.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you see a lot is political entrepreneurship. You know, businesses getting laws passed or writing, you know, writing the legislation themselves to give themselves an advantage over their competition or, you know, future competition. You know, as you know, we were talking about medical stuff. You know, people go, well, we need the FDA. I'm like, really? Oh. Are you sure? Because look at all the health stuff, you know, look at, yeah, do you eat processed foods? Well, no, it's got all those chemicals in it. I'm like, okay. You know who said that was okay for human consumption? The FDA.
Right. Yeah, I mean, not only do they put out things like bad, you know, food, or where they say things like margarine were good, or they come up with that god-awful I mean, and I'm talking like fucking retarded. the food pyramid. Look at the food pyramid. Do people understand what's on the bottom of that thing? It's carbs and carbs and carbs and more carbs. It might as well all just be sugar. Like the entire base of the pyramid might as all be sugar. And yeah. The fact that, you know, the government's like, oh, well, this is the way. Like, come on, dude. Like, you got to be kidding me. You know, nobody retracted. Nobody got in trouble. Nobody, you know, the FDA just sat there and is still kind of upholding that whole model where we know that, you know, carbohydrates, especially sugars, should be, you know, used really sparingly. And, you know, I mean, you look at the introduction of the FDA in history, I think it was what, like 1940s, 1950s or some nonsense like that after the war, the part of the New Deal crap. The American diet has just gone to complete shit with the artificial, you know, flavors and fillers and all that kind of stuff. And then obviously on top of it, their ability to approve, you know, pesticides that come from Monsanto and genetic type, you know, food that's been, you know, made in a laboratory that has no nutritional value, and the body doesn't, you know, understand how to break it down because it's kind of a almost an alien type food.
Yeah, like high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah.
It does all the same damage as sugar, but your body doesn't recognize it. Like, you ever gone back and just had a sip of like, remember when they came back out with the Coca-Cola and the green can? It was like cane sugar, like the original OG recipe.
Yep.
And you took a sip and you're like, ooh, that's sweet. And you just put it down. You didn't want anymore because your body was like, hey, 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 that's poison. Put it down. Put it down.
Well,
but if you go drink the other one, you can just pound them and your body never says shut off.
Well, and I'll tell you, from a guy that tried to quit sugar, you know, a long time ago and really haven't had, you know, I might have a Coke once a year. When you drink them and you haven't, and you're not used to sugar, what else happens, man? Like your stomach is in knots a lot of times. You get too much sugar in your gut.
Oh, your gut hates you.
Oh, yeah, you get moody, you have swings, your blood sugar's all over the damn place. You next thing you know, you're either, you know, yelling at the dog and the kids or something like that, and your wife, you know, like that's one of those things that I'm glad that, you know, I found out a long time ago, sugar's the damn devil. The damn sugar cartel, you know, that the FDA supported there for a long time and actually still supports, I think. You know, thank God for social media and everything else where people are getting information out there and people have adjusted their diets a bit.
Yeah, well, you can't have cartels without government writing the laws that make it happen. It's just like monopolies.
That's right.
Government has a monopoly on violence, and then they hand out monopolies on other things. You know, that goes all the way back to Lincoln.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that he was a railroad lawyer along with Sherman. And yeah.
I didn't know he was a railroad lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why after the Civil War, they switched to using Chinese slavery and Irish to indentured servitude to build railroads.
Huh.
And he helped approve a bunch of that stuff. Actually, it wasn't. I might be wrong on this, but wasn't the Department of Justice was started after the Civil War to enforce Reconstruction in the South?
I think you're right there, man. It's been a while since I've gone back into my Civil War history, but a whole bunch of really god awful things, you know, like that have I don't know. They all come out of war, right? It's like, oh, hey, you know what? We're so desperate for peace. Let's sign up for more government.
Mm-hmm. Well, even the Civil War was a banker's war.
Sure, of course it was. I mean,
it had nothing to do with slavery.
Yeah, I mean, the 1800s is when Jackson killed the banks for a very short while, at least. And, you know, then Abe Lincoln comes around and says, no, hey, fire it back up. Let's go. And, you know,
yeah,
obviously he met his demise, you know, but and I think some people would say deservedly, you know, not that anybody here would ever support anybody, you know, taking life, liberty and property at the threat of force.
Murder is bad.
Yeah, murders are all bad, but you know, that guy 500,000 plus lives destroyed. I mean, plus, you know, the families on top of that, that lost their brothers and kids and sisters and, mm-hmm. you know, innocence. I mean, just god awful person.
And then painted the South as the, you know, demonized the South, which still happens today.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
you know, they don't,
most people, it was funny.
They don't talk about, you know, all the war criminals that, that he pardoned, when Sherman came through the South. Not only did he burn homes down, you know, private homes down, there was also rape and murder and things like that. And, Lincoln pardoned all that.
Yeah, it's god awful, man. I mean, and look at our current situation. I mean,
I was about to say, speaking of burning things down and creating victims.
Yeah, I mean, when we look at everything out there, and I swear to God, you know, I look at America completely differently than I did when I was a kid, mm-hmm. or when I was even in service. I mean, probably, I mean, even more differently than just 2 months ago now. Where the violence of the state is being doubled down on is it. And really, if you're looking at the president, you're saying this guy, if he wasn't restrained by somebody out there, would bring in the military and, like he said, use unlimited force, basically unlimited military force to win back the affection or at least the submission of people. It's time America had a Nuremberg moment and said, all right, enough is enough. All the, you guys that just, you know, wrote the executive orders and carried out the executive orders, you guys are all going to stand trial for this kind of stuff. And it's such an easy case to make, is like, hey, empty all the prisons of the nonviolent offenders out there, quote unquote offenders, and start filling them up with these bad cops, bad politicians. I mean, it's got to happen, or else, you know, one way or another, this country is just going to slip further and further into tyranny.
Yeah. It's getting nuts, man. Like you said, it's just it's an exponential evolution at this point. I'm seeing things I never thought I would see.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree.
And
did you see that dude that got pushed the other day?
Yes.
That old man that they just push and he cracked his head, you know, hit you. I hate seeing that, man. Like, I mean, you know, as a guy that's been, you know, that's been in fights and everything else, mm-hmm. like when you see the back of somebody's head hit the concrete like that, bounce. And I mean, this guy is old. He's not a threat. These cops come up and push him, and he goes down, smacks his head, and starts to like bleed, almost hemorrhage out of the back of his head. And instead of like tending to the guy, their first instinct is no, don't stop, don't talk to the guy, don't touch the guy. Form a wall so that nobody can come in here and get to him, get to us, or maybe even video what we've just done, right? Mm-hmm. And all those dudes, I think it was 50 something guys on that emergency response team up there in Buffalo, they just walked off and said, we're done, now that those two guys had been reprimanded and punished.
Well, they just quit that special team. They didn't quit their actual job.
Right.
But here's the thing. If that dude, you saw him walking up to him, he could barely move. You know, he was just shuffling to him, and he had a phone in one hand, and they were saying, well, he was going for his gun. I'm like, no, he wasn't, you idiot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, if you're going to say, well, I was feared for my life, I'm like, if an old ass man and chihuahuas and things like, if that makes you fear for your life, you're in the wrong damn job. Go do something else. Go mow grass. I don't give a shit.
Well, and that's the thing, right? It's like, you're signing up to be a police officer. If you're signing up for a safe job and you want to use that excuse as like your safety is paramount to the rights of the people, you're in the wrong damn profession. And on top of that, you're a coward. You are an absolute coward if you think that your safety is somehow paramount to the rights of people, because that's what you signed up to do. You signed up to protect people's rights. Like that's and uphold, quote unquote, the Constitution of the United States.
First and foremost.
If you can't do those two things, it's not keep us safe. I'll tell you, like the boomers that watch Fox News.
Ugh.
Yeah. And in a day and age,
it's conservative CNN.
It's all horseshit. It's all spun horseshit. This red, white, and blue spangly Nazism almost. And you know, I don't want to do that. I don't want to say the Nazism because, you know, obviously they haven't murdered
and nationalism.
Killed. But you know, they do still support things like the damn drug war, like we were talking about, and stop and frisk and all these things that they wouldn't allow in places like the suburbs or in the rural areas, like. That they champion in urban areas. At any rate,
Republicans are just Democrats that don't smoke weed.
That and they're 10 years behind the times, maybe.
Yeah,
I mean they're progressives 10 years ago.
They are. They're all like Bill Clinton Democrats at this point.
It's so true. It's so true.
Which is funny because I was thinking about this. I'm like, how they're trying to paint every damn thing as white supremacy, and now there's riots and everything like that. I'm like, holy crap, does that mean punk's coming back? This is like the '90s all over again, man.
I would much prefer late 1960s, early 1970s, where rock and roll was ballads and all that kind of stuff. Bring back the ballad rock and roll, man. Like Greta Van Fleet.
Dude, you put me onto them.
Oh, are they not amazing?
Insane. And to be that young and be that good, they are just phenomenal.
Have you gone to the concerts yet?
No, I want to though, so especially while they're still super affordable.
I don't know, man. Like with all this COVID crap that's going on now, it's getting, you know, nobody gives a shit about social distancing and the bullshit that it was. It's like now, hey man, bring back the concerts and bring back the comedy shows and let's get back to it.
Yeah, but apparently COVID is only not contagious if you're rioting and burning shit down.
Yeah, you want to talk about that for a second too?
Yeah, if you're protesting because you want to go back to work and things like that, then you're a racist, white supremacist, Nazi, whatever.
And how dare you?
Yeah. How dare you?
You want to go back to work? Yeah.
Oh, you want to be productive? Selfish bastard.
What are you thinking? But that's the crux of this whole thing. So where do we go with the agents of chaos out there that are getting paid? And that's the thing is, I don't know, maybe you talked about this with your audience before, like there's paid agents of chaos. There are people who are protesting that work in pyramid schemes out there that, you know, it's basically what Amway
for
protesters. So the more people that you can get under you to recruit more people and more people and more people, the more you get paid. Like this goes on across the country, and you've got other organizations out there that I guarantee you are NGO type organizations, or they are funded by dark money within our own god awful bureaucracies, you know, like whether it's the ATF, the DEA, whoever else in the alphabet soup is, you know, throwing on all black and putting some skinny kid out there in, you know.
Oh yeah, man, you can see, because most of your typical Antifa types are like, they look like they're about to be late for a shift at Starbucks. And you know, they ain't doing shit. But then you'll see some in the crowd. If you know what to look for,
yep.
They got a little bit of hitch in their giddy up. They're the way they move and navigate through the crowd. They got their head on a swivel, a little bit. You know, they look like they probably do some squats. You're like, okay,
they skip leg day all the time.
Yeah, they're like, okay, there's a professional there.
Right.
And that's the ones you see. You know, this happens a lot. There was talks of, you know, things like that going on and during the Occupy Wall Street protest, where they had there's a group of people that's what started up all the, you know, the destruction there too.
Yeah. So, I mean, you got all these chaos agents that are out there. And I mean, like, no kidding, professional paid chaos agents. And you got your amateurs, and then you got your useful idiots. And you know, it sucks. Those guys are going to get found out one way or another. They're going to go too far. They're going to go into the wrong neighborhood. They're going to try to go to the wrong business, and they're going to get lit up. Because, I mean, let's face it, like, blowback happens because of violence. It's not that blowback happens just because of the state. Like, it happens because of violence. Mm-hmm. And when you start destroying people's livelihoods, their homes, their businesses, whatever, or you know, God forbid, you know, people's actual lives, where you're, you know, hurting, maiming, or murdering people, mm-hmm. Blowback exists. And I think a lot of the people who have seen this in, you know, the urban and suburban areas out there are getting to the point where they go, hey, yeah, you know what, police aren't going to help us. They can't. And at this point, I'm going to take my gun. I'm going down to my shop. Maybe I'm calling my brother or my cousins or mm-hmm. my buddies or the other business owners in that area, like they did out in Idaho. Mm-hmm. And they said, strap up and let's put down, you know, any type of, you know, violence that we're going to see in these places. And what? It works like that. Like, and I think that's the answer. Like, this answer that we're going to escalate with, you know, police and military, like, that's never going to solve the problem. That's just going to, that's just going to have more people hate the police and hate the military. Whereas if it's private store owners that take care of their stuff and their property,
heroes. And
yeah, you've got no kidding heroes, because let's face it, you know, they're not out. They're not on the offensive. They are literally in a defensive position. And just that's what creates the kind of the just war, right? Like,
Militia is. That's what the militia is for. You know, are we not the militia?
Yeah.
You know? And that's everyone. It's, you know, I'm not saying like we're in a militia. I'm not saying that, because, you know, someone's going to spin that like, oh my God, white supremacists. No, the population itself.
Right.
You know, and there's a reason why you see those people that are private citizens that are doing the things. There's a reason why you don't see them. You don't see videos of them pushing down old dudes, you know, kicking some handcuffed college girl in the face while she's sitting on the ground. You know, you don't see that kind of stuff because they're not enforcing the law of an empire.
Yeah.
They're just trying to protect their community because they have a vested interest in it not getting burnt to the ground.
Yeah. I love seeing that. And I'll tell you, you know, what's funny is, like, I've been having conversations, you know, people have been asking me about, you know, where do I stand on the UBI here in Georgia, you know, obviously running for office. And, you know, to have that conversation with them, to say, hey guys, listen, you know, debt and taxes equals slavery. And I'm not pro slavery. Like, I'm anti-slavery. And then to, you know, like, you can only fit so many things in on Twitter at mm-hmm. one time, right? But it's kind of a great platform for planting those seeds, because they can go, well, dude, this guy's saying he's anti-slavery and, you know, suggesting that I might be pro-slavery. This creates this little mental ripple, and the time to strike and plant that seed and that ripple, man, it's amazing to see what happens. They're like, well, you know, if you're against taxation altogether, then, you know, it sounds like you're being a little bit
morose.
Yeah, like it's like, is that hyperbole? Mm-hmm. And then you have this opportunity to tell them, hey, no, man, like, let's play this out. Like, if I don't pay my taxes, you don't pay your taxes, somebody's going to come in from the government with a gun, and they're going to point a gun at you. They're going to extract that property that they want from you, whatever it is. Then if you resist, they'll throw you in a damn cage, and if you resist hard enough, they'll kill you.
Yeah, that's why, like, Jacob Hornberger, when he was on a show and they said, you know, would you say that taxation is theft? He goes, I would say it's armed robbery.
That's right.
And I teared up for a little bit. That was a good one.
He's a good dude, man.
I love him, dude.
What do you think of Joe?
I wasn't interested when I heard the interview that you did.
Yeah, I wasn't interested either. Is that bad?
Not to say, well, I'm not saying that she's a bad person, but Nick has done a really good job of pushing the Libertarian Party left.
Oh yeah.
And libertarian parties, it's not libertarian, it's libertarian, like liberty.
Right.
And yeah, it's just a bunch of hot garbage. And especially now stuff that's coming out, you know, some behind the scenes stuff that's been coming out and seeing a little ass tyrant he is. And, you know, now he's trying to pick fights on Twitter with Eric July and Maj Torre again. I'm like, can someone get this idiot a helmet and get him off this?
Dude, I actually got in on that fight a little bit yesterday, and Eric July ended up following me and retweeting. I said nice. Something to the effect of, I said, what did Nick say? Nick said something about, this is Eric, and I'm gonna pull it up because I've got it right here.
Yeah, somewhere. And he was trying to be all slick, but he didn't know that he was posting something that was photoshopped.
Yeah, he's an idiot. He said, "This is Eric. Eric accuses people who share his accurate quotes of lying. Eric thinks he's in a position to tell other people what they need to do. Don't be like Eric." And I replied to dipshit or, you know, what some people call rat fuck. And I said, I'll take Eric July every damn day of the week and twice on Sunday over your manipulative and compromised principles. And then I posted that Deadpool he takes Megasonic and he bops her on the nose and says, boop.
Yeah.
Like, hey, child, sit down and shut up, man. Like, your time is over. You know, best thing for Nick Starwalk to do at this point for the Libertarian Party is walk away, man. I don't, you weren't part of the convention online a couple weeks ago, were you?
No, but I've heard a lot of reports from that.
That guy, what a joke. I mean, try to railroad the whole thing.
Either get on the train or get in front of it.
Yeah. What?
Like, bitch, you can't whoop my ass.
A little soy boy, you know. Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is, Nick might as well be an anti-fasci guy, right? Like, he might as well be that guy who dresses in his skinny black jeans and goes out and does just, you know, the bidding of the state. Like, the guy,
he's what an emo kid looks like when he's grown up.
Black eyeliner, some black nail paint. I see it now.
Dear Diary.
And that's cool. If as long as he's whatever. Not taking other people's stuff, but, you know.
Right,
if he's going to be the guy he is, where he's trying to control the entire party and use his influence and power in manipulative ways, like, screw that guy.
Dude, I just love how Josh Smith trolls his ass. So good. I love Josh. I've been trying to get him on my show, like, forever.
Guy's a busy dude, man.
He is a busy dude. And
that's good, though. I mean, the guy is, I mean, he's put in the work. And I tell you what, I'm excited. I hope that you know, that we've got enough people out there that realize he would be a really good thing for the party.
Yeah. Let me just say this. Any big L libertarians that probably don't listen to the show, but you should, don't screw this up. You've got a perfect opportunity,
right,
to stand out away from the two parties that are just screwing it up really hard right now. They all look like assholes. Be different. Don't be, you know, Republican light. Don't be Democrat light or progressive light. It's not the Libertarian Party.
Yeah,
this is the time to shine. Yeah, this is the time to shine. Not to be sitting there going, we're going to get disaffected progressives into the party. Why? That doesn't mesh up.
No, and here's the other thing is, we also don't want disaffected neocons in the party, like General Mattis.
Right.
Like, it's fun to shoot some people. No, man. Listen, you know, from a guy who's been there and done that.
Yeah, some people need to be shot. I agree with his statement on that. But
but right, like, as a last resort, and still, that's going to haunt you the rest of your life,
no doubt,
one way or another. Right, like, there are, like, even if you do it in a just way, mm-hmm. there are going to be times where some people, you know, can't handle that, and they're going to go, could it have gone down a different way? And they're going to question it, and it's going to bug them the rest of their life, man. And so for somebody to sit there, you know, and try to welcome that guy and say, hey, man, this party is right for you. Like, no, man.
That's like, when
General Mattis is a stone cold killer.
That's when Josh Smith goes, well, when I'm chairman, I'm going to ask Pol Pot to join the
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I'm going to resurrect the ghost of Pol Pot. Oh, that was fire, man. But yeah, it's, I don't know. And then Nick will say, well, we shouldn't have purity tests to come into this party. I'm like, yeah, well, then why are you, you know, calling the Mises Caucus guys Nazis for not signing your stupid little sheet that says they're not racist? Everybody knows they're not racist, you dipshit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that, and here's the other thing is purity tests, you don't need a purity test in the Libertarian Party.
But there should be standards. I mean.
Well, and that's the thing is I don't think, you know, with NOTA, you know, none of the above on all of our ballots at every convention, you know, if somebody sneaks in and, you know, we had this guy, who was it, Ashby, who came on the show down here. And, you know, like, that's the thing is, like, you don't need it. If you hear him talk and they're spewing all sorts of non-principled.
Oh, is that the guy that came over from the Republican Party?
Yeah.
And yeah, that's like musicians that aren't very good. So they try to get into country or Christian music and they can make it there.
That's right.
That's what the Libertarian Party has become almost. And it's like, that's no, we don't need that. It's like the whole thing, like with Justin Amash. I'm like, you know, kudos for you, but you could have done that a year ago.
Yes,
you could have. Yeah. You know, why did you wait till now? And then, you know, the rumor is that Nick really wanted to do it because Nick wanted to be the VP.
Yeah, you know, like I don't know that's for sure, but
I don't know if that's right for now, sure. Like, I wouldn't be surprised.
I would. Oh no, at this point, and that's the thing is he, you know, he's discredited himself enough to, you know, open himself up for doubt, and you know, his intentions are obviously, you know, can never be looked at as, you know, principled. They're looked at as power. And I'll tell you, that's what gets me is to see all these people who claim to be liberty people who are, you know, really in it for potential power.
Like, right,
man, it's no. Once you have a seat at the table, that's when you are affecting culture. And that's when you have to be screaming about giving all that power, you know, back to the people through deregulation and decentralization. Like that's what it's got to be.
Like my platform would be like my, if I was going to run for office, and I never will.
Never say never.
It's like, okay, look, this is my platform. My whole job is to keep government from messing with you. I don't want you to have to think about politics. I want to make it to where it's so insignificant that there's nothing to talk about because they shouldn't have that much power anyway. You know, and I'll say this, kudos to Justin Amash for the when he decided not to run. Mm-hmm. That was pretty classy. And then when he was introducing the bill to remove qualified immunity.
Oh man. Spectacular. Right.
I was like, that's a pretty girthy move.
That's bally. I mean, this isn't hard. And the thing is anybody who can't see it as a politician, like this is the time, you know, I hope people call it like the great, I don't know, I'm not even awakening. Like it almost sounds like Joe Biden's wet dream, the great exposure, right? Like it's one of those things where it's exposing all these people for who they really are. You got your people who are, no kidding, warriors for liberty who have emerged right now. You've got people who are your fence riders. You got people who are pro state, and you've got, you know, the people who are absolutely all about chaos and floundering in this moment because they don't understand how to make the system work for themselves. So, I mean, and the thing is you see how the lines of parties have disappeared and you have, you know, these disaffected people like Republicans going, oh, no, Trump. This is where we draw the line. We don't use U.S. military on U.S. soil against American people, right? Like, and then you've got, you know, those people who are just diehard MAGA, you know, drooling idiots where you wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't constitutional. Like,
right. Who, when Obama was in office, were making fun of the progressives that did the same thing to Obama. I'm like, you're the same people.
Only maybe worse, because maybe Obama never threatened the American people with the or the governors of like he came out and literally said to the liberal governors, right? Like if Barack Obama would have come out and said to the conservative governors, if you don't get your stuff in order, I'm coming to come in with the United States military and basically take over your state.
Like with gun control or something. Cause you know, they were always talking about that. I'm like, yeah. But he had control. They had control of everything and didn't pass shit.
Yeah. No gun control. Like Trump
it was
has
all talk.
Way more gun control. And, you know, these people that are MAGA, 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 you know, they'll be like, oh, but it's an accessory. Oh, but this or some whatever exception that they, you know, they have to, I don't know, to justify in their line to make it. Yeah. I mean, that's sociopathic.
Well, you know what you do when you rationalize, right? You tell rational lies.
Ah, no, I've never heard that. That's makes sense, though.
Yeah, when you try to rationalize some bullshit, you're just lying to yourself or lying to other people to make it seem like it's okay.
You ain't lying to me. I see through that shit.
Yeah, right. You know, well, I mean, I hate to say this, but Republican. Well, no, I don't hate to say it. Why am I saying that? Because I don't care. It's two wings of the same dumbass bird.
Sure is.
It's Republicans, you know, have passed more gun control than the Democrats have.
Oh, by far.
And I always laugh. I laugh my ass off whenever I see like someone like David Hogg will say, we need to get rid of the NRA. I'm like, yeah, sure. Cause the, I think I told him one time, I was like, why would you want to get rid of your biggest ally?
Cause these people are chumps. Yeah. God, they're chumps.
Well, they help co-write the NFA, the Firearms Act of 68, 84. I think there's one in 87 or 88 and then 94. They had a hand in all of that.
Oh, I mean, it goes back, I mean, into the 30s even.
Yeah, you know? What I'm saying, like the National Firearms Act, that when they were in Congress and there was, or whatever it was, they're having the hearings for it. And they said, does this in any way violate the Constitution, the Second Amendment? And
yep.
the representative from the NRA said, we haven't even looked at that.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I've been railing against the NRA for a long time, man. Like, those guys are one of the shadiest, most misunderstood organizations out there. And it's what's crazy is, you know, the misinformation that the media has helped them with, right? It's like, you know, what's the old Shakespeare quote? Thou do protest too loudly.
Much. Yeah.
Yeah, right? Like, if the media is sitting there telling you how god-awful the NRA is, you might want to sit there and go, all right, why are they saying this? You know, I don't know, maybe to help fan the flames of the right so that they champion the NRA that goes out there and supports them with, you know, every dying breath, puts stickers and clothing on and parades around this organization that is probably one of the biggest gun control organizations in terms of the amount of gun control that's been passed. I mean, 22,000 infringements, 22,000 plus infringements on the American people's right to keep and bear arms. And the NRA never, ever, ever talks about that number because they would have to own the large majority of all of the policy and laws that they supported that are on the books now.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just like you got all these FUD conservatives going, well, you know, Trump's for gun rights and he's not going to take our guns. I'm like, well, really? Cause 5 minutes ago he was on TV bragging about how he's increasing the ATF's budget and that they're prosecuting more. They have more prosecutions for gun violations than ever. And well, that shouldn't break the law. I'm like, it shouldn't be a law in the first place.
If it's a constitutional law, it's void, like, null and no force.
You're like, well, we can't have like machine guns on the streets. I'm like, dude, I carried a belt-fed machine gun. I was paid to by the government to carry a belt-fed machine gun. I'm like, so once I take that costume off and I come home, that means that I no longer know how to use that platform or that I'm just going to turn into a psychopath and run around the street because I have it now? No. Okay.
Let's talk about how the free market works with that kind of stuff, because I think, you know, I think there are even a lot of people who have served who think that people shouldn't be able to own machine guns, right?
Yeah, they usually those people, if you really go dig and look into them, most of them were S4.
gonna say S1, S2, yeah. S4.
Yeah, well, hey, I was an S2 man.
Yeah, well, some of them are. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. But they're like old. Yeah, it was just, well, it's like Mayor Pete. You know, I carried an M4 and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, dude, you were a political appointment. You didn't go through any of the stuff. You're basically just like Joe Biden's kid went in at 40. It's not, you're not the same.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't just get to go for a bit and do nothing. I mean,
it's like, bro, you were a chauffeur. You weren't a Navy SEAL.
Yeah. So, I mean, the free market, and that's the thing, is with like machine guns and things like that, when people are like, well, you can't have that kind of weaponry on the street. Well, here's the deal. Listen, most people can't afford that type of weaponry, right? Like, no. Machine guns are super expensive. I don't know what a 240 or 249 or, you know, a 50 cal cost, but the, you know, like in terms of being a real machine gun, they're super expensive. I mean, and we're talking thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. Now,
well, let's put it this way. So we can't own anything manufactured after 1986. Thanks, Reagan. Right. So it was just like anything, prohibition increases cost. So for me, you know, to do the paperwork, you know, fill all the paperwork, pay $200 to the ATF, and then wait like a year while they do a background check. Meanwhile, I've got a carry concealed permit and I already had a background check. I've already had like multiple background checks. I have to wait for all that. So if I wanted to buy like a stripped receiver for an actual M16, you know, made in like 1970, it's going to be like $15,000.
Right.
But that's all due to prohibition. But I can go buy one if I was going to do an AR build, you know, for semi-auto. I can find them right now for like $40.
Wow.
And the only thing is different, there's one hole and a notch cut out. That's the only thing that's different. But they're really expensive. You know, that's the thing a lot of people don't understand about full auto or things like that. Man, they're hungry and they're expensive to feed.
Well, yeah, they're hungry, they're expensive to feed. On top of it, like a lot of those systems work differently. You know, with your what, 240, that's an open bolt system, mm-hmm. right? Like open bolt systems are far different than a closed bolt system. On top of it, they're heavy. And mm-hmm. when you think that you're going to just pull up and pull out a machine gun and start going to town on possibly a crowd or something like that, that doesn't happen. Like what you gain in, you know, fire superiority, you lose in speed, and that is costly to somebody who is going to go out and try to terrorize people. Because if you have an armed society, somebody with a pistol can put down somebody with a machine gun real fast, you know, before mm-hmm. sometimes before they can even get it up and running. And as soon as that thing is, you know, in a break or something happens where maybe the brass fails or they got a, you know, a type 2 or something like that,
which happens a lot more than people realize.
Oh, all that damn time with those things, especially if your headspace and timing isn't right. And that's the thing, is, you know, we're talking about all these different aspects of employing a weapon system that most people, first of all, can't afford, that secondly are expensive to run, and thirdly don't have the understanding on how to employ those weapon systems, or the knowledge to know how to do it, or at least even the practice on knowing how to do it. And then, and you're like, where are you going to go and fire an automatic rifle at, or even a machine gun? Most ranges won't let you do it. So if you're out, you know, in the middle of nowhere somewhere practicing with this thing, or you're, you know, you maybe nobody will know, you know, that you're up there doing such a thing. But for the most part, if you are practicing somewhere else within earshot of people and they hear automatic fire, that's going to be those Karens that go out there and call the cops anyway and be like, hey, man, you know, there's some automatic fire going on around here, which obviously, you know, in a free country, that would be fine. Nobody would think about it. It's just, we live in this god-awful, you know, backwards bizarro land right now. And we've got, I don't know, just, it comes down to people being scared.
Yeah, it is. And that's a thing. Jack Spirico talks about that a lot. You know, if you're not self-sufficient, then you're typically, it's like a ratio. It's like the more self-sufficient you are, the less fear you have in your life, and vice versa. And so many people have outsourced their decision making and their just general day-to-day life out to the government. So they're not in control. And so they have to do some care and shit to feel like they're in control.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're an accomplice in crime when you're calling 911 and reporting American people or anybody for that matter for practicing a right.
Yeah.
You know, like the fact that somebody has a gun on their hip or somebody has, you know, a gun at a protest, you know, as long as they're not brandishing it and threatening people and coercing people, you know, like, hey, that's not a crime. And I can't stand the fact that, like, I ask sheriffs all the time, hey, if you have somebody call your dispatch and report a legal activity, instead of sending a unit out to check on the legal activity, why aren't you telling Karen to shut up and say, hey, no, listen, you don't get to call us and report legal activities. That's a, you want to talk about what a crime is. Like, that's a crime, because what you're trying to do is sanction force against people that aren't committing crimes.
Yeah. It's like, oh my gosh, there's someone shooting on their property. Well, are they shooting at you? Well, no. All right, what are you calling me for?
Right? It's crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely nuts, man.
I was going to make a segue, but I think that might be a good place to cut it.
A natural stopping point?
I think we hit it. Well, man,
oh, God, it's already 10:30, man. We're chatty.
Dude, I tell you what. You and Matt Freeman, I can just sit there and just talk.
Exactly. You just kind of come up with, you know, wherever the conversation rolls to next. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's supernatural. It's awesome, man. Well, now that all this this craziness is starting to let up, we got to meet up and get some beer and wings.
Yeah, man. I'll tell you what. I'd like to see how many guys, you know, within kind of our boog boy circle.
Since you said boog boy, I just got to put it out there. Boog. The Boogaloo movement is not white supremacist movement at all.
Do you know how many people I've had call me about that kind of stuff, man?
I mean, dude, I got a buddy of mine who's like African, dude. And
yeah, like he's Nigeria.
Legit. And he's got a sweet AK. But dude's got like 4 or 5 Hawaiian shirts, man. Like, he's about it. And I'm like, it's so dumb.
I've had to educate people on what the Boogaloo is, right? Like, hey, the big luau, it's a dance, right? Like, it's what, you know, a lot of guys from the, you know, the veteran, like the no kidding combat veteran society that's at large right now. They call combat the big dance, the big luau, basically. Mm-hmm. And Boogaloo, you know, the Magnum PI shirts that we've adopted and everything else. It's just a way for us to recognize each other. It's a way for us to bring some levity to the situation.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it doesn't exclude anybody. Hey man, you're down for people's rights and you're down to push back tyrannical government. Hell yeah, dude. Like,
please. We should make this the motto: liberty for all, not some.
Oh yeah. I like that, man. Yeah.
I'm going to make a t-shirt.
Do you have t-shirts for your show yet?
No, I need to do that though.
I haven't done that either.
I signed up for Teespring, and I figured that's a good way to get started when you're broke. I'm an intel guy. I'm not that smart.
If you keep up with it, man, you just keep creating content. You keep putting little pieces out and all that kind of stuff. Eventually, other people are going to share your work. Right. And that's what I've had to do. And I'll tell you, starting over on my own was. You know, it sucked. It was one of those things where I was like, man, I'm going to lose a ton of audience because they're going to be like, dude, this guy evaporated and I have no way to get out to all those people that were listening to the other show anyway. So it's like, you might have some people that know each other and some people that communicate online and all that kind of stuff. But for a lot of them, most of them, you know, you just lost an audience that you've been building for years. It sucks, but I'll tell you what, man, it's a nice thing to be able to do whatever you want to do whenever you want to do it too.
Yeah I'll talk when we start recording. We can talk about that. Let's go ahead and have you plug all the things that you got going on.
All right, I
know you got a lot of irons in the fire, so
I think my main effort right now is Radical. You can find that on at Radical Pod. it's basically, you know, if you listen to anything out there in terms of platforms, you can find it on Lisbon. So whether it's Apple or Google or I think iHeartRadio or any of that kind of stuff, you can find it, the link to it at the Radical Pod Lisbon page. Everything else you can find on my Facebook page, Shane Hazel GA. So it's got links to everything else out there. And for the campaign, I've just told people, don't donate to my campaign, for God's sakes. You know, if you want to help me out, you can go out to patreon.com/radicalpod and help me out there. But the campaigns, man, campaigns that have great ideas just need to be shared. They don't need money. So help out your local charities and things like that in this tough time. But I think that's it, man. It's all radical for me right now. That's what I'm pushing. that's my life, is getting this thing up and running and doing lives and all that kind of stuff and starting to simulcast so that it's on YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and Instagram all live all at the same time and doing shows that way.
Awesome.
Well, man, thanks for having me on again, Brent. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're kind of not really, but we're kind of neighbors. We're both in North Georgia, so
we're neighbors. That's neighbors in North Georgia.
Well, awesome, man. It's always a good time talking to you.
You too, brother.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. Hang back when I'll stop recording, and if you got a couple minutes.
Yep. Right on. Okay.